Hello and welcome to the Monocle Culture Show. I'm Tom Edwards, and today we are in for a musical treat as we head into an air-conditioned cinema for Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, the second instalment in the ABBA musical series. Some people love it, others find it too cheesy, but what do our critics think? Well, joining me in the studio today with their two cents are the film critic Anna Smith, deputy music editor for The Guardian Laura Snapes, and Monocle's very own Fernando Augusto Pacheco. In the summer of 2008, cinema-goers were treated to the all-singing, all-dancing ABBA jukebox musical film Mamma Mia. I've been cheated by you since I don't know where. It starred Meryl Streep as a hotelier in Greece called Donna and Amanda Seyfried as her daughter Sophie, who's on the hunt to find out who her dad was. Pierce Brosnan, Colin Firth or Stellan Skarsgård.
We're here for the wedding.
You are expecting us.
Oh my God, yeah. Yes.
Mamma mia, here I go again. My, how can I resist?
Well, 10 years later and the whole crew are back for Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, complete with an extra special guest star. More on that later. And plenty more lung power to belt out some ABBA classics. This time around, Sophie is pregnant with her first child and looks into her recently deceased mother's past. What ensues is a series of flashbacks where we discover how Donna met the three loves of her younger life.
I was cheated by you.
I'm Bill.
And I
I'm
think
Donna.
You know when.
The world is wide.
So
I want to make some memories.
Mind. It must come to
Can I help?
Look at me now.
She's missing her man.
Will I ever
Which one?
The first Mamma Mia film had mixed reviews, that may be an understatement, but grossed more than $600 million at the box office, the fifth most successful film that year indeed. The sequel seems to have been received with more enthusiasm by the critics, but we're yet to find out if it will outdo its predecessor in financial terms. Anna, Laura and Fernando, welcome to the programme. Anna, I'll start with you possibly. Tricky second album syndrome or tricky sequel syndrome, but there has been a sort of distinct increase in positivity, broad optimism, critically anyway, about this film. So there's the question. Sequels, notoriously hard to do well. Do they deliver?
Well, some do, some don't. I mean, I'm a big fan of Back to the Future 2, for example. I don't think this compares at all. I don't think it's as strong as the original in terms of direction. But what it has is a great deal of love, and it has the spirit of the original. I think it's one of those films that, as a critic, you look at it and you think, OK, this is not a good film. In fact, there are technically elements of it which are terrible. But did I enjoy it? Yes. Did it put a smile on my face? Yes. Does it do what it sets out to do for its target audience? Yes. It's like one of those sort of cocktails you have on holiday, which is, you know, not very well mixed, but really packs a punch and still really colourful. So you think, OK, I'm sat in the sun, this is all good. And it's got that vibe about it.
I'm just thinking about that analogy. Some of those cocktails I had on holiday, they were good at the time, but looking back, not such a good idea. Laura, what about that point, though? Feel-good films. I mean, it's bandied around that kind of phrase. But, you know, we're in a funny moment, I guess. 2008, some strange dynamics there. Is this the film we need for the times we're in?
I think yes. I think it's kind of an easy conclusion to draw, but I think it's because it's the right one. It's funny, you were talking about the kind of change in critical tenor around the film. The first one got such horrible reviews and the new one is getting rave 5 out of 5s from Mark Kermode in The Observer. And partially I think it's a recognition that we just need some kind of unadulterated, unpolitical cheer. But also I think critics have kind of recognised, partially because of the success of The Greatest Showman and the success of the original Mamma Mia film, that to go into these things, like Anna was saying, with a really critical mindset, like, oh, the backdrops look really fake and the camera work is bad and the lighting is weird and the dubbing is off and Pierce Brosnan can't sing, is to kind of, it makes you seem a bit snobby and you're not really getting into the spirit of the thing. I don't think anybody who loves Mamma Mia thinks it's like Citizen Kane. I think they just think it's fun and transporting. Although I would say that as much as there are elements of the new film that are very feel-good, I also think it's a like morbidly sad film. It's how do you deal when your parents die? And also, the thing that I thought was kind of radical about the first film when I came around to liking it several years after having seen it for the first time was that it was like a radical film about middle-aged women's sexuality, which is not something you see on screen very much. But the thing, and you know, and by focusing on those women as younger women in the new film, I wondered if it could lose some of that kind of radical nature. But I suppose what I think it does is it tells you that before you came along, your parents had lives, and you may have underestimated them. And I think that's quite powerful.
And Fernando, it's interesting that idea of, you know, the fact that maybe people bring a certain amount of baggage or expectation. And I remember talking to you, I think, before you saw the sequel, and you were very excited, and you came back and said, it delivered, or, you know, people were standing and applauding in the aisles. Did you sense from your fellow watchers of the film that they were being won over, or was everyone there like you? Had they gone there and they were like, we are going to love this?
Well, to be honest, I think people had some expectations before because they've seen the first one. That's the only thing that the first one was better, because it had this element of surprise. Because I think back in 2008, if you look at the box office chart, we didn't have a film like this. We had The Dark Knight, you know, Indiana Jones. And suddenly you see like those Hollywood megastars, Meryl Streep, kind of having fun, losing up. That's something that Hollywood hasn't been doing very well recently. And it's funny that, you know, Laura was mentioning The Greatest Showman. You know, sure, there are a few musicals, but not enough. You know, I think they're missing out a huge box office opportunity because people, they want to see this. I mean, I saw the face of excitement. I don't know if it was only my session at the 9:20 screen on Friday when it was released, but people were extremely excited, you know, as much as they wanted to see The Avengers or any other superhero film.
Were people up at the end on their feet and singing? Because I went to the premiere and people were doing that, but that's obviously because maybe that's just the premiere.
I mean, when Cher sang Fernando, there were clappings.
And
I had to clap as well.
Well, we'll get on to show, as it were, in a moment. Anna, just on the point about musical films, though, and The Greatest Showman, which a couple of you have mentioned already, is this an interesting area where there's a disconnect between the critical response and the actual commercial appeal? Because The Greatest Showman, the critics did not like that, but it put up some pretty good numbers in cinemas because obviously it resonated with the public. Is there a bit of a disconnect between the critical community and the public? And does that matter?
Well, I think The Greatest Showman, perhaps it was exaggerated, the critical opinion, because actually most people gave it kind of 3 out of 5, as I did, maybe some are 2 out of 5, but it wasn't panned. It sort of became a news story that it was panned, and that's not the case. But of course, audiences did love it much more than most critics seem to. And I think very interesting what you were all saying, really, about the responses to Mamma Mia 2, and that some of my peers are recognising that we need to think about how the audiences respond and why the audience are going to certain types of films. I mean, people are not going to Mamma Mia 2 for a fantastically rewarding and deep story. They want to sing. It's a jukebox musical. It's an event movie. It's something you go to sing along with. And I still feel within those parameters it could have done better, but it delivers on that basic level.
Now, Laura, you sort of alluded to this earlier, and you've written very entertainingly about the shift in your attitude, certainly towards the first picture, and there's some complicated personal history involving some of the suffering that you had to go through during those early screenings.
Yes.
But was part of that shift in your attitude to do with the reaction you saw it getting from the public? Because presumably that's still quite powerful, whether or not we agree with it for critical reasons. You know, that it is quite it's proven a very sort of potent force, hasn't it?
It is definitely a potent force, so that really didn't have anything to do with me coming back round to it. So for context, 10 years ago I worked in a cinema, and Anna, you mentioned singing and dancing. I used to have to sing and dance and clap at the end of every showing of Mamma Mia, which we showed from the day it came out to the day it came out on DVD. We were like 15 emo, underpaid teenagers made by our sadistic manager to stand in front of the screen, all the credits roll and the cast are having their party, and clap and sway from side to side for the audience who were having a great time while we were not. So it took a long time to get over the trauma of that mortifying experience. But no, last year I just thought, I think I'd quite like to try this again. I had become a bit less serious and a bit more into kind of like high camp and pop and flamboyant things, and it turned out I did like it.
And those things, Fernando, high camp, this sort of flamboyant entertainment, are things you're constantly trying to certainly make me watch and listen to more of. There's a bit of a moment, isn't there? Obviously, there's a sort of ABBA re-renaissance, and this is serendipitous. Well, not serendipitous, it's all controlled. You know, the group's maybe making some original music and this sort of thing. Why now? Does this come back to where we started, this idea of a sobering time for the world and people want to escape? You've been committed throughout. Why do you think this is happening now?
Well, clearly, I think one of the reasons the reviews have been better for the second film, because I have to say, I haven't decided which one I like the most. I think, to be honest, they're very similar to me in the way I like them. But I think 2008 was a different world. You know, I believe Obama was being elected or was president. And this time, you know, we had only horrible news more so than in 2008. Mm. And people, they generally need escapism in a way. So I think this counts a lot, you know. So that's why people are looking for camp or for more frivolous. I'll say frivolous, but, you know, as Laura mentioned, the film, it is quite emotional as well. I did cry in one of the performances when Meryl Streep, I don't know if the show is spoiler free or not, but there's also the emotional discharge. But clearly in 2018, people need more escapism in their lives, for sure.
And now one of the, I guess an individual who sort of embodies the notion of cinematic and musical escapism is Cher, and we've mentioned her already a couple of times. And we have to mention, this is a stellar appearance, it's all very exciting. Again, does it live up to your, I wonder what were your expectations and did she live up to them?
Well, having seen the trailer, I knew she was going to arrive by helicopter looking absolutely fabulous and then proceed to sing. But it is that wonderful sense of her making a very, very grand entrance and to living up to her really over-the-top reputation. And the film really plays on that. And I thought, actually, she lifted the film. I mean, it was already pretty high up by that stage. I thought it was actually one of those films that started off a week and got better. But her bits are a highlight for me. And I think she did lift the mood. And she's just got that star power that sort of resonates the second that she comes on the screen. And all with a bit of a sort of a wink and a nod. The tongue is firmly in the cheek.
And Laura Scherr is interesting because she's obviously turned in some very, you know, critically acclaimed movie performances. You think back, I mean, we're going back a bit of a way, admittedly. But she's a sort of intriguing figure in terms of, I wonder what informs her decisions on what roles to do and to turn down and so on. Do we learn anything about Cher, the enigma that is Cher in this film?
Well, I have to say I disagree with everybody else. I thought that the Cher part was the cheapest part of the film because I thought it had been very emotionally true to that point. And then all of a sudden you basically have a larger-than-life character, a meme being brought in, because Cher's cultural renaissance over the past few years is because she's great at Twitter. She's really good with emoji. She's really good at slagging people off to their face. And I think the film just wanted a bit of that kind of, I don't know, yeah, like memification, really. And I like Cher a great deal, but I just felt like it didn't really need that. But yeah, I mean, it feels symbiotic with this era of her personality. And also she said she's going to do a covers album of ABBA songs, which I think I'd be more into that than her part in the film.
Because she does sing Super Trooper in a very nice way with her, you know, very strong bass, like Super Trooper, you know, so... That was good.
Now, what about the various sort of protagonists behind the camera? And we talked briefly a little bit about how the film measures up to the first one and so on. It's an interesting challenge to steward a film like this. And the director, Ol Parker, he's done the Best Marigold Hotel series and things like this. How do you think he performs? Because I don't know, is it easy? Is it actually hugely complicated? Is it a difficult director's chair to fill, maybe?
It is difficult. I mean, when you've got two timelines, you've got a lot of flashbacks and then you've got the present day, and that is quite tricky. As I say, I don't think he was the safest pair of hands for this job, personally. I think there are some editing choices that I would have, you know, thought need a little bit more thought. It was a little kind of scrappy, but in a fun way. But I think, most of the audience will enjoy it regardless. But in terms of the switch between the two time zones, I quite liked the flashbacks probably more than the current day, because I thought Lily James was just terrific. And I thought she brings this joie de vivre and this buoyancy, which Donna, the character, really, really needs. And there's a sense of her just having this eternal optimism. Although I think they might have worked a message about contraception in there. I feel like in 9 months' time, we might have lots of little baby Donnas wandering around.
Heaven forbid. Laura, what about that? Were there any sort of musical standouts, performance standouts? Lily, Cher, we know you're not so sold on. Who do you think made a real impact in this piece?
Oh, God, I have such a terrible memory. I don't really remember any specific musical parts, but my favourite actors in the whole thing were the younger versions of Donna Friends. So is it Jessica Keenan-Wynn who plays the younger Christine Baranski? I thought that was immaculate. I mean, it was just caricature, but she did such a great job of it. And the younger Julie Walters equivalent as well was really, really funny. But yeah, Lily James, I mean, it was properly like capering through the scenery, but she was very game and very appealing.
Fernando, only fair I ask you, any favourite caperers in chief?
Well, I will avoid the cliche here. I mean, clearly my favourite has been Fernando because that's my name and I love Sherry. It was just a magical moment.
We've asked you this before. Were you named for the track? Maybe? Possibly?
Not really. It was a very popular name for boys in Brazil in the 80s. But you know, I do like some of the ABBA's, you know, B-side tracks as well. And they did sing some of my favourite songs like Angel Eyes, you know, Christine Baranski and Julie Walters did that. And there was a little version of Kisses of Fire performed by a Greek band. It was quite unusual, but I love those songs by ABBA, so I was very happy to see them, you know, in the film as well.
in the final piece. What about the if we take a step back and look at the sort of cinema landscape, certainly here in the UK, but maybe in the States and globally as well, we talked about it being the right kind of thing for the times. Does this change up people's expectations? Do you think, I don't know, productions, even big studios, for example, might say, look, this kind of, it might be a little bit paint by numbers, but, you know, it does the box office, the public love it. Will we see more of this kind of thing? Do you think that's possible?
Maybe. I'm probably not the right person to ask that question to. But the thing that I did think was interesting was considering what a massive amount of money the first one made. They didn't shoot in Greece. They for cost cutting, they shot in Croatia. And I thought, why are you trying to save money on this film that is very popular, part of a very popular franchise and will be very popular? But then maybe they figured correctly that the kind of cheap production values would add to its charm.
Well, we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. And what about the point on the landscape? Do you think that we'll see people trying to, not necessarily sort of, you know, piggyback on or ride on the coattails, but does it give pause for thought for, you know, the big moguls who are making these decisions?
Absolutely. I mean, any time there's a smash hit movie and possibly also a smash hit sequel, then all the studios are clamouring to think, how can we capitalise on this and how can we make something similar? Sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. Of course, after, you mentioned Best Exotic Marigold Hotel earlier, obviously we had a lot of Greyhound comedies after that. Some were good, some were bad. So yeah, of course, I think we're going to see more musicals, especially in the light of Greatest Showman, as we were saying. I just hope that they're high quality ones.
Well, we can all share that aspiration. Fernando, presumably you're welcome with open arms. Anything in this sort of...
Well, I welcome, but to be honest, I don't trust Hollywood, you know, because, you know, with the first film was a success. I wonder why it took 10 years for, you know, for...
Also, too long. That's your main criticism.
Yeah, it is too long. And to be honest, I don't care. Bring it on, Mamma Mia 3. Next year, you know.
I just find,
I like
thought,
things fast.
Are we into some kind of mega vehicle, multi...
The new superhero franchise.
Well, yeah, is this... I don't know.
What, you think this one could run and run and run?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I'm fearing it might.
Now you've mentioned it, maybe it could.
It could be
dozens of these to come. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, it's such a huge cast. It is quite difficult if you want to get a lot of the same people back because they all have a lot of conflicting schedules. So that is generally why it takes 10 years, you know, to get everyone together. I mean, there's so many big names in that room. And that's probably the biggest problem, the biggest hurdle ahead. And whether they'll have, you know, Mamma Mia 7 with people you've never heard of or have no relation to these.
I can kind of see it now for some
you,
for some.
You know what
reason.
I can see? Let's remember, in November there will be a musical based on Cher's life in Broadway. I can see that turn into a film. 1st of November starts.
Ooh. That's big. It's big. In the Augusto Pacheco diary, that is big. It's the point in the show where we ask each of our guests to name something that our main sort of topic reminded them of or prompted in their minds. Laura, there's a particular actress in Mamma Mia who you're a fan of. I think we mentioned her a moment or two ago, but remind us and tell us, I don't know, why she sort of piques your interest more broadly.
Christine Baranski plays Tanya, who's one of Donna's friends, and she's the kind of raunchy, multiple divorce, lots of plastic surgery one, though I don't actually think she's had that much plastic surgery as a person. And she was one of the standout performances in this for me. She's got one of the best lines, which I won't spoil, also because I don't know if I can actually say it on the radio. It's quite rude. She has... Not that this is part of why she's a good actress. Incredible legs. There's a scene where she jumps over a table where I was like, wow, you are a lady in your 60s. That's incredible. But I feel like generally it's... Success is coming to Christine Baranski kind of late, but in a really, really deserved way. She played Diane Lockhart in The Good Wife, and she was a supporting character in that. But the spin-off, The Good Fight, she's basically the main character. And it is an incredible portrait of female power and, you know, struggling to use that power in a very male-dominated world.
Well, let me jump in right there, because we have a little clip just to remind or introduce our listeners to that very character. Let's take a listen.
The world has gone insane, Liz. The news is satire. It's not real. The people blowing up grizzly bears have been put in charge of grizzly bears. So I've decided the only way to stay sane is to focus on my little corner of it. My firm. The people in it. If I make my little corner of the world sane, then I won't let the insanity win.
That's Christine Baranski as Diane Lockhart, I believe. There you go. And this is interesting because, you know, there's a lot of talk about the roles for, you know, women of sort of Christine Baranski's age in Hollywood. And it's great to see so many strong characters having such fun. Do you think she's kind of put herself front and centre to get, well, to pick, essentially pick up a lot more really compelling roles, hopefully?
I don't know if that's her kind of game plan, but I would really hope that it would happen with her. It seems like she's kind of having that like Susan Sarandon style moment. Mm. I think she's really proven herself as a very complex lead in The Good Fight. There's a lot of talk in television about how if you want to have something female-led, you have to have female versions of the male anti-heroes that have been so popular on screen. And I think that's quite a tired concept. But the great thing about Diane Lockhart is she's not perfect. You do root for her, but she's very complicated. Like in the second series, she's basically been driven mad by the Trump presidency. And somebody introduces her to the idea of micro-dropping acid, just a tiny bit every day. And you start seeing the world from her perspective, and she doesn't know if what she's seeing is real or not. And there's all these kind of brilliant newsreel footage of what she was saying about like grizzly bears eating people and stuff. And it's kind of it seems like a spiral into madness, but then she kind of claws it back, which was the clip that we heard, in a really exciting way.
Fernando, you have a favourite actress in Mamma Mia. You mentioned it already. Cher, of course, unsurprisingly, perhaps. And you want to remind people about that acting back catalogue, which I briefly mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I just would like to remember that, you know, Cher got an Oscar for Best Actress, and she'd had amazing roles in the 80s in quite a few films. I was actually checking again her filmography. You know, she did, you know, Silkwood, actually, with Meryl Streep, and even some camp fun like The Witches of Eastwick with Michelle Pfeiffer as well, and Susan Sarandon, and Jack Nicholson. That reminds me when I was young watching TV there in Brazil. And I even have a clip for you guys from Mermaids from 1990. Another classic with Winona Ryder and Christina Ricci as well. It's amazing. And she sings this song.
Does he love me? I want to know. How can I tell if he loves me so?
Is it in his eyes?
Oh, no, you'll be deceived.
Is it in his eyes?
Oh,
I just have a sort of strange image popped in my mind of a youthful Fernando, yes, in Sao Paulo, rocking out to that. I can't. How old would you have been then, Faye? Can you remember?
Well, I'm a fan from a young age. That's okay. That's all I can say. And the thing is, she's an amazing actress. But to be honest, the only problem I think of Cher as an actress that, I mean, she can only kind of play Cher, which is amazing as well, and that's good enough. But yeah, even Moonstruck, where she got the Oscar, you know, even when she says snap out of it, you know, and some other classic lines as well. Even recently, I mean, I know not many people liked it. Even I didn't like it very much. Burlesque with Christina Aguilera in 2010. It could have been so much better. But even then, I have to like Cher, even in that horrible film.
And I like the fact that, you know, you sort that out without fail. To run your critical eye over it, Fernando. Anna, further reading, and again, we actually touched briefly. Laura mentioned this earlier. It's sort of a holiday tip potentially as well. You've been to the location. We mentioned it, I guess, purely from a sort of expedient cost-cutting point of view. We were in Croatia, not Greece. Tell us more.
I wouldn't say it's necessarily cost-cutting, actually, because it's a very unspoiled island. It's called Vis, V-I-S, in Croatia, and it's 2 hours from Split. And I knew nothing about it until I thought, let's go and check it out. That's where they filmed the film. And it was closed to the public until 1989 because it's a former army base. So it's actually not that developed. So you can see sort of why they decided to film there, whether it's financial or not, I don't know. But from the visual side, what you see, those quiet little streets are really that quiet. And the harbour, it's got lovely yachts in it, but otherwise really is pretty calm. It's a lovely place, actually. It's quite rich in history. And it's got lots of beautiful little fishing villages and like about 50 beaches for a small island. So I would say that is a good travel tip.
There we go. Is everyone booking their tickets, Laura?
Definitely tempted.
First in line. Fernando?
Of course.
The sun is shining here in London at the moment, yes, but it's definitely a place we could go. Well, that brings us to the end of today's programme. Thank you all very much for being here. Mamma Mia, here we go again. That's my own emphasis. It's out at cinemas now. Thanks to Anna Smith, to Laura Snapes, and of course to Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Thanks too to our Holly Fisher behind the glass. Do join Robert Bound. He'll be back at the same time next week. But for now, thanks for tuning in.